Hello, and welcome to a new episode of the Every Mother Knows podcast. This is Angela, and today I'm going to talk about the experience of moving abroad and realigning to your career goals after a relocation. Moving abroad is a complex transition which has a huge impact on our life and career. In this episode, we talk about the experience of moving and living in the Netherlands. Our guest speaker is Deborah Valentine, Executive Director at Access Netherlands. Deborah shares her own journey as an international, living abroad and navigating across different countries, cultures, and workplaces. She encourages us to see the glass always half full, especially when things get overwhelming, and also tells us about the support that an organization like Access Netherlands provides to the international community in the Netherlands. Hello, thank you, Deborah, for joining us today.
Good morning, thank you for having me.
So today's topic is about moving and living in the Netherlands. And I think you are really one of the best persons here to really share some insights on that transition, on how it went for you as an international who at some point relocated abroad and also moved to the Netherlands, but also as the executive director of Access Netherlands. So we are really excited to have you here today and share your insights with our community.
Well, I certainly hope I can encourage people. That's my intention.
Nice, a good one. Deborah, could we start talking a bit more about Access? Could you tell us briefly what Access stands for, what Access does, and also your role within the organization?
Certainly. So Access is a local nonprofit organization based here in the Netherlands. It started about 35 years ago when a mental health professional noticed some problems within the community. And it was set up with two legs, so to speak, a preventative and a curative. The curative was to put together a list of counselors, professional counselors, who were experienced with the process of relocation and put them on call so that people could be referred to the right sort of mental health, mental well-being support that they needed, be it language, location, or specialization. That network, 36 years later, still exists. And people can call it and contact it free of charge to get the right referral to the support they're looking for. The preventative part of the model was to provide professional volunteering opportunities to people so that they could build a community, meet people, have something to do. And this network of volunteers not only runs the organization, but most importantly, runs our help desk. So we have a team available to answer any question that internationals have, either when they're preparing to relocate to the Netherlands or when they've arrived. And also even, you know, months later, people who arrive single and then get married have questions and then get pregnant have questions. So we don't look after people just in the first 3 or 4 months, but we're available to anyone with a question who isn't quite sure how the system works in the Netherlands. And yes, and I have been the executive director of the organization almost 12 years, I think, which is the longest I've worked anywhere in my life.
Must be a very inspiring position and organization to be part of. Could you just give us some insights about your work as an executive director at Access? What do like your days look like?
Yes, no. So I do a lot of encouraging, and I think the most important role as executive director, besides the fundraising, of course, is just to provide a steady base for our team of volunteers. We work with about 150 volunteers at any given time, and they run the organization. So to give them a focus as to why we're doing this, where we're going, how we can do it, giving them the stability is, I think, an important factor in ensuring that this organization still exists after so many years. And of course, as executive director, I'm also in charge of fundraising, which has its challenges, but we're managing them. So our funding comes from three sources primarily. We have agreements with expat centers in Amsterdam, The Hague, Utrecht, Leiden, and the Gemeente of Amstelveen. And they give us a service fee for the people we provide to their centers. We have a partnership program with service providers, And although we're not a marketing agency, we certainly get the views on their website. And so we they support us, but they also get their visibility. And the third source of funding comes from our agreements, our patron agreements with international employers who want to offer not only their staff, but specifically the partners and spouses of their staff with additional information and just giving them sort of a helping hand to make them realize they're not alone and that there is support for them.
Yes.
So that's the essence of my job.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And could you also tell us more about your own journey as an international, as somebody who moved abroad at some point over life and career, and eventually also specifically your move to the Netherlands? How did everything go?
Yes, well, that is, I am a proverbial expat, so to speak. My father was a Canadian diplomat. I was born overseas. We moved every 3 or 4 years. I then joined the United Nations and moved 2 or 3 times. I then married a Dutch diplomat, so continued moving. So I have been the expat child, the expat employee, the expat spouse, the expat mother. From 0 to 40, I moved every 3 or 4 years of my life. I have, however, been settled in the Netherlands now for some time. I've stopped counting the years, although both of my children moved out of the house, so it's been a few years since I've been here. Yeah, so, but I've seen, you know, I was really encouraged. I was very fortunate to have been encouraged by my mother, who always remained curious, who always made an effort to learn the language wherever we were, who always showed us the importance of meeting local people to enhance our knowledge, to satisfy our curiosity. And most importantly, she and both of my parents taught us to always look for the half full cup and not the half empty cup. And to look for the benefits that we could gather, that we could contribute. We lived in several countries where I was not allowed to work because of agreements between countries, but that didn't mean I couldn't do volunteering work, that I couldn't contribute my time or my skills in other ways, which in turn fulfilled me.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I have been adjusting to living in one place. So I move the furniture a lot, much to my children's distress. But they don't live here anymore. So, you know, I can move it freely now.
Yes, I think you mentioned a very important point, also having the right mindset to
yes.
navigate those transitions.
And yes.
I mean, really seeing the glass, the cup half full is quite an important reminder. Also, when things get a bit uncomfortable
yeah.
and things are not really going as planned, eventually along the way, you also develop that skill of navigating changes, dealing with changes. And yeah, I think probably changes have been a constant in your life and in your career.
Yes, no, they certainly have. And I do want to say that, you know, I am an optimist. I had this background. And so I'm able to do that quite easily. However, there are people who have other challenges. And so what we, and certainly at Access, what we try and do is, even if you have some challenges, is to try and encourage people to look at some of the positives, because you can start to feel better about yourself from a positive. It can be very distressing. It can be very overwhelming to yeah. sit back and realize what you've missed or what you've given up. And if you don't have someone to help you find the positive, you can spiral downwards, which is one of the values of Access. You know, we really, really, our volunteers, 90% of them are partners of people who've relocated here. The community is getting much younger than it was 35 years ago. So there are many more looking for a job, but one can't look for a job 24 hours a day. So, you know, we expect 6 to 8 hours a week from somebody. It gives somebody a place to go, people to meet, things to do. And that hopefully encourages you to become a little bit more self-confident, to find the positive, to be able to look forward with more enthusiasm. But I, you know, we do recognize and realize, and I certainly have helped many people along the way, people who sometimes start off on a lower footing. And it's our job. And you know, you asked me earlier about my work, and I think that's an important quiet role that I play in the background, is to help people find the something positive from which they can grow from.
Yeah, very important. And of course, the support that Access offers is very tangible, very hands-on, because having that community, that real network of people to go to, can really make a huge difference in this transition.
Absolutely.
Who are the internationals that Access supports specifically? Could you maybe share some insights with us in terms of background or countries that they come from?
That's a very broad question. We actually don't collect any information. We grew from a mental well-being project where confidentiality and lack of details is very important. So to this day, we do not collect information on the people who contact us. We collect information on the sort of questions they're asking, and we collect information on how many contacts we've had over the year. But if somebody sends us an email with a question, we respond to that email and we basically throw out the email address. We don't collect it. We don't add it to a newsletter. Our relationship with them is to answer that question. Mm-hmm. Even during COVID, even though we couldn't see people, we moved to an online system so people could phone us through Zoom and we could answer their questions that way. At the end of 2021, we had 9,500. At the end of Q3 of 2022, we were already above 7,000. So we're on track to continue growing. But we don't collect information from people. You know, the most people have to understand English. People have to speak sufficient English so that they can also volunteer with us. But details we don't collect.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yes, that's very clear. Talking about those questions that come to your help desk, to your colleagues, to your volunteers, which one has been the most recurring question? Which question has been coming up every time?
That changes. We notice in different locations a slight difference. But for instance, over the summer when people are arriving, housing in the last year has been a very high question. Questions about education, in that we include also people who are wanting to learn Dutch, and employment related matters. So the accompanying spouse who is looking for, or partner who is looking for a job or looking to go back to school. So, and then for people coming in March, for some reason, healthcare seems to be more important. So those would be the top four issues that we're getting questions about.
Yeah, that's very interesting and useful also to know that there is a change in terms of period, depending on the time of the year, those questions also change.
And there are also changes in terms of which center it is. So you notice that some expat centers who, 90% of the people we deal with have to go through an expat center for their PSN or their migration papers, residence papers. Some centers are better organized than others in terms of provision of information. So that affects the priorities. But those are the top four matters that we deal with.
Yes. And when we look into the services that Access provides, which are the services that have been most popular so far?
Well, the help desk, obviously. So answering questions, which is either people contacting our help desk or looking at the questions on our website. We have about 300 frequently asked questions in a variety of subjects. Our childbirth preparation courses go very well. And those take place in The Hague, Amsterdam, Utrecht, and Rotterdam. We started first aid courses for new families, which are growing quite significantly. So those are going well. The counseling network is there all year round and gets used quite often. And our patron program, the services we offer to international employers, is growing slowly. But it's growing. So it's, but I would say our help desk and our childbirth courses are perhaps the most consistent area that people reach out to us for.
Yes, thank you for sharing that. And when you look at your work and also the people that you meet every day today in the current times, what is that you still see as the biggest challenge that those people encounter when they move to the Netherlands?
Yeah, so I'm going to put aside the questions because, you know, these days with internet, you can find quite a few answers. But I think what's a big gap is being able to ask the question of somebody who's been in the same position. Having an answer about how something works with the empathy of, I've been there, I know why this is confusing to you, is crucial. Especially when somebody arrives, you have so many questions. Everything is so new. You're possibly dealing with children or housing or different matters. So being able to speak to somebody or consult an organization that is empathetic, first and foremost, is a relief for many people. We collect the statistics on the thank you emails that we get, unsolicited. You know, it's just they send us a question, we send the answer, and we get a thank you email back. And it's amazing how many people are just so grateful. So I think the empathy is a crucial factor in that process.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, because as a newcomer, I mean, kind of really relating to people who have walked that talk, who have done it, who have gone through that experience, can really make a difference. And you need that empathy, especially when you are feeling overwhelmed or when you're navigating a big transition in your life or in your career.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And it's hard to put a price or a value on empathy. It's just there. And, you know, the empathy is wonderful for our clients, but the thank you emails that we get back is wonderful for our team. So it's a self, you know, it reinforces one another, each other.
Absolutely. Yeah, it creates the right energy to keep doing your job, your work, and also to keep all your volunteers active and motivated on these goals.
Of course, our monthly drinks helped on that front as well.
That's a good one. Yeah. talking about accompanying spouses, so this is something that you have been as well as an individual, as a partner, as a person, and you have been supporting also other spouses within your network and with Access. What are the resources already available to them, and what do you think can be done further on to support this specific talent pool of individuals?
Yes, well, so given the current talent shortage in the Netherlands, there are certainly myriads of opportunities. So I think, you know, our help desk, certainly depending on what location you're living in or what industry you're in, our help desk is certainly a resource, because if you're not sure where to start, they can help you find the right places to look for employment. We also have a network of trainers, many of whom are coaches or people who can help you with your LinkedIn profile, or like yourself, Angela, who can encourage people to prepare and to look at their CV and adjust it to the local market, which is, you know, very important. One of the messages that I certainly have for people, the Netherlands is related to the part-time work. The Netherlands has a reputation of part-time work. And so a lot of people come and they think, oh, I want to work part-time. I want this work-life balance. It is possible, but what I spend a lot of time doing is trying to at least point out to people that the part-time work is often, not always, but often negotiated from a full-time position. So there are fewer part-time jobs being advertised. So people get very frustrated, but there are no, you know, there are no part-time jobs. And this is one of the reasons. And another link to that reason is, what is full-time work? How many hours a week? That changes from country to country. And so here it's somewhere between 32 and 40 hours. But how you divide those hours is also part of the work-life balance in this country. So I think in a recent discussion that we had together with our patrons, you pointed out, and I thought that was a very valid point, that when you should, people should still be applying to jobs, if it, even if it is not quote unquote part time, because in the interview, there are moments to find out what is full time for your company. Can I divide those hours over 4 days, for instance? But so encouraging people to be a little bit more daring and going and applying for those things at least creates few more opportunities to discover what is possible and not what doesn't look possible. Another important part of my messaging, and I know that there are many, many people who have to work, who have expenses and you know, need the actual physical cash, but there are many who don't. And we shouldn't apologize for this. We should embrace this. There is volunteering work that can be done to help the community. You have languages, people have skills. There's an opportunity to go back to school. There are opportunities to start some freelance work. So finding a job isn't the only resource for many people. I know it's a resource that many are looking for, which I respect and admire, but I try to remind people that our identity is not linked to a paycheck. Our identity is linked to what we do, how we do it, the people we know, how we fill our days. And so encourage, you know, I try to share those messages. So first of all, define a little bit more what the expectations are in the Netherlands about part-time work, what is a full-time work week, but also open up the panorama of what one can do while here. And yes, and again, you know, your identity is not linked to a paycheck.
Absolutely.
Your identity is linked to so many other factors.
Absolutely. And to feel happy, to feel fulfilled, of course, a job can make an impact there and can help you feel that way. But there is so much more that comes into the picture to be able to feel happy and fulfilled in your life, especially when you're living abroad and far away from your home and family.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very good reminder. Thank you for sharing that with us today as well. And I think, indeed, I like to also kind of reiterate this message that volunteering here in the Netherlands is a very well-structured activity, an opportunity to brush up some skills.
Yeah.
So it can really look good on your CV as well, eventually, if you have that goal of landing a job later on.
Yeah. No, true. And as you say, it's very structured in this country. And then at the volunteering, there's a high percentage of people, Dutch people who volunteer, whether it's the sports club, you know, serving a beer or running the team or driving kids. So volunteering is done. It's respected. It's recognized. In many cities, there are opportunities for volunteering for which little to no Dutch is required, where they are finding organizations who need certain skills but don't necessarily need the Dutch. There are others where you can say, I want to improve my Dutch, which is a great way of using your language outside of, you know, grocery shopping, which is where we all kind of start. And it's not the most encouraging way of practicing your language skills. But so there are tremendous benefits. And one of the things that we do, at least at Access, and I hope other people do this as well, is we encourage people to put on their LinkedIn profile, not volunteering with Access, but the title of their role.
Yes.
Member of the finance department. You know, if at an interview somebody says, oh, Access is a volunteering organization, you can have that discussion then. But primarily, what's primarily important is that you were in the communications department or the finance department, that you were using skills that people might be looking for. So, we encourage people to at least do that on their LinkedIn profile, to keep their professional persona alive and talking.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, very important. Deborah, we are coming towards the end of our conversation. Are there any specific initiatives or events that you want to share with our community today, something that we can keep an eye on in the coming days or weeks?
I think the best advice we can give people is to sign up for the newsletters of the expat centers closest to them, or all of them, if you're interested, of course, there's no restriction there, because they are quite effective at sharing these kinds of events which are open to people with little or no Dutch. And also, you know, lots of debate about Facebook these days, but there are several different groups on Facebook that you can join that organize events or are encouraging people to get together for, depending what country you're from, some of the last minute football games that are taking place at the moment. So, so I think those are the original two, the best two tips I would give is sign up for the newsletters and just Google a few groups. There are many expat groups on Facebook in your area, and they will be sharing events that you can also go to.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Deborah, for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Angela. My pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Keep an eye out for the next episode of the Every Mother Knows podcast next month. If you missed out any past episodes, don't forget to check them out. Speak soon.